Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right, every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarlane, that's me. Willie Donick over representing East Nashville. Chase McCabe on the west side. In Bellevue, Elijah Campbell holding down things at our Wholesale Inc. Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Someone we haven't talked to in a while, and we're looking forward to this conversation. Longtime former Predator or Predators captain Shea Weber is on the line with us. Shea, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, guys. It has been a while. How are you guys doing?
Unusual circumstances for this interview, right? How's the family?
Oh, no doubt, yeah. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I was supposed to be there in Nashville, so it's definitely different, and everyone's doing well. It's a tough situation, but I think we're doing okay holding in there and getting our homeschooling in here and trying to stay as busy as we can inside.
I hope you can appreciate this. We were kind of tracking when you were coming back from your injury and kind of tracking your game count. And when you came back, we knew that the game here, and I don't even know if you knew this or not, because we haven't had a chance to talk to you, that night here would have been career game 1,000 for you.
Yeah, I had a couple of people reach out to me once I came back. Obviously, I had an idea that I could play 1,000 games this year. I think it was supposed to, if I'd played all the games, it was supposed to be out in California, but it was kind of crazy how it worked out with this injury that everyone thought I was done for the year, maybe my career. I don't know where they got that, but turns out it would have ended up being 1,000 in Nashville. Obviously, not anymore, but would have been pretty darn cool.
Willie and I remember, obviously, you got drafted here, and Willie and I remember talking to you. You're 19 years old. In fact, I think you were, Willie, we did a show at Blackstone Brewery. There's a blast from the past here in town, and Shea was a part of that, and you were 19 years old. And, gosh, can you imagine, can you go back to getting drafted in the very beginning of your career to where you sit today, what that journey's been like?
Yeah, it's wild. Actually, I was talking a little bit with one of my old teammates about it yesterday, and I mean, Nashville is a place where I pretty much grew up as a young adult. And I mean, I had billet parents for my whole junior year when I moved out from home, but I pretty much grew up there for 10, 11 years. And I mean, it's a lot's changed now. There's so much different, and those are some of the best years of my life. I'll always consider Nashville a place that. It's close to my heart and, you know, my second home at that time. So it's, you know, it's definitely come full circle in a long way, but definitely some great memories that I'll never forget from there.
Yeah, and you got to see this city grow up to what it is today. I mean, just to think about that. I mean, really, the last 5 years have been absolute craziness, as you know, now coming in with the Canadiens. So you don't get to see it as much, but you've seen the growth chart and where we are today. When you initially got drafted, just think about how different the city was, how different the franchise was. What was your initial thought? I mean, were you like, who are the Predators? Oh my gosh, what am I signing up for? And to know now what this city and this fan base has meant to you throughout your career. But what did you think initially? Were you confused? Obviously, you'd never been here, right?
Yeah, I'd never been there before. I knew it was the music capital, and to be honest, that the draft was in Nashville, so I got to go down there and spend a little bit of time there before, but I had no clue. I had no idea what I was getting into, especially getting drafted there. It was an honor to get drafted in general, but I really didn't know what to expect. There wasn't much history from a hockey standpoint, so I didn't know a whole lot about the franchise. And I mean, it didn't take long. I think we were, after the draft, we had a development camp a couple of days later, got to spend a week there and really fell in love with the city right away. Obviously, it's changed a lot. Like you said, going back now, it's hard to believe what downtown looks like compared to my first year living in Nashville. It's just night and day. And obviously one of my favorite cities still, and always enjoy going back.
Former Predators captain Shea Weber on the line with us. You can appreciate this, Shea, as a big baseball fan. So we've got this bracket that we'll get into. You made our final four of our Nashville sports bracket, which is the best athletes in the last 30 years to come through our city. But we've had a lot of people on from our bracket. And as a baseball fan, we had Mookie Betts on and David Price and R.A. Dickey and a lot of major leaguers, and just talked about, you know, their journey. How do they get to this point? And everybody goes through a fork in the road at some point in their life. And David Price came on here and told us the story, how he went in his freshman year and told Tim Corbin and Vanderbilt, like, I just want to be a normal kid. I think I'm just going to go flip burgers at McDonald's. And Tim Corbin, you know, talked him into staying. And how just think about how different his life is today with that decision to stay. And Mookie Betts told us at 18 he was thinking about switching sports, and look how that's worked out for him. So how about you? I mean, hockey was your life, but you've appreciated other sports. You've done other things. What was that fork in the road for you? At what age, and you know, how did you process that and get through it to where you are today?
Well, let's just hit the David Price thing. Obviously, that, what a decision by him not to flip burgers. Thanks. You got to be thanking Tim Corbin on that one. Hey, holy moly. That's a lot of money made out of that choice.
Yeah, now you know why he gave back millions to the program.
that's great. That's a good story. But I guess for me, you know, growing up in Canada, obviously the goal is to play in the NHL, but I played baseball until I was 16. I think was when my dad, he came to me and he just said, you know what, if you're really serious about hockey, you need to start training in the summers and lifting, you know, doing all the dry land work if you're fully committed to it. It'd be tough to make it just playing both sports right now. And so I had to give up baseball. I don't think it would have went anywhere, but I did love baseball and obviously fully committed into hockey at that point, started training a lot more seriously. My dad loved training as well when I was growing up. So he was a little bit ahead of the curve as far as like getting me into some strength stuff before I actually got a program from Nashville and everything. So that helped and kind of took off from there, I guess.
Wow. You could have been the next Larry Walker though, Shea. You never know. Or Justin Morneau.
There's not a whole lot of Canadians like that, but yeah, you never know.
Well, Brent Peterson always tells a funny story. He had Justin Morneau in the junior program in Portland, and he said, well, baseball, you're going to be a great hockey player. You don't need to go play baseball. And of course, Justin, you know, went against Brent Peterson, and he turned out to be a pretty darn good baseball player. I think won an MVP for the Twins. So
yeah.
Brent's going, hey, great advice I gave him.
Yeah, whoops. Well, I guess it worked out.
It didn't work out. Shea, I got a text message from Chris Mason. Says, tell Fuffy I say hi. So, Mace is listening,
yeah.
I think. But you know, we had a great discussion with Mace yesterday about Pecorino. He got to the finals of our bracket, so we were getting reflective about Pekka. And you go back to the very beginning of Pekka's career as well. You were just getting established yourself in the league as he starts coming along and getting into the league. And I'd love for you to tell me the first time you met Pekka and your impression of him.
Yeah, I met him in Milwaukee. And, you know, obviously, I guess I met him at camp first in Nashville. But I got to know him a lot better in Milwaukee. My first impressions were just a quiet and obviously a huge guy. Like, that's, you know, a big, long, lanky goalie is your first visual impression when you see him. But super nice guy. He was respectful, and obviously one of my good friends now. I've kept in touch with him even since I've moved up north, and someone that I'll probably continue to keep in touch with for the rest of my life. Just such a great guy, great competitor on the ice, and you know, his play obviously speaks for itself and how much he's done for that organization over his time there. And he developed in Milwaukee, and our first year there in Milwaukee, he wasn't even starting because we had Brian Finley. So he kind of had to work his way into that role and took us right to the Calder finals, where we ended up losing. But definitely one of my good friends that will be for a long time.
Don't you think he's one of those guys that has got that great contrast, and it's a rare thing. It's something I think we would all love to have, right? Nicest guy you'll meet off the ice, but such a fiery competitor on the ice. There's some people that can't separate the two, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. He you hit that on the head. He is one of the nicest guys. He so respectful and nice guy. And when you get out there, and it's not just games either, it's practice. He's competitive. He's not quitting on a shot. There's no rebound that he's given up on. And sometimes guys come in the second half of the drill have to shoot in an empty net because he's making three or four saves while he's lying on the ground. He's just got that edge, and obviously that's part of what's made him successful. He's obviously got great tools, but the mind aspect is definitely a huge part as well.
And then another guy I wanted to ask you about, because you've seen his journey as well and you saw it from the beginning, is Roman Josi. He's now, you know, fully into the peak of his career, the prime of his career, now the captain here. Of course, you guys have been very, very close for a long time. But let's go back to that beginning again with him. What was your first impression of him as he started coming through?
He was just like a happy-go-lucky kind of young guy when he first came in. Same thing, easy to get along with, very respectful young guy. I think he got hurt either in his first camp. Did he break his wrist in his first camp or second camp? I can't remember. He got hurt early in one of them and went down, obviously, and worked on his game a bit. But one of those guys that, you know, same thing. He's a great guy, super nice, and he's also a fire competitor. A lot of guys here are like, oh, I didn't know Josi was, you know, he was hard like that or competitive. I'm like, oh yeah, he gets fired up and he plays hard. Not just you know, he's not just a fully skilled defenseman. He's not afraid to get in the corners and battle as well. So I think, his game's progressed in tenfold. Like, he's playing some of the best hockey I've seen him play. I've watched a lot of him play this year, and obviously spent some time with him in St. Louis catching up a bit, and it's good to see him doing so well.
We're talking to Montreal Canadiens captain Shea Weber, a former captain, of course, of the Nashville Predators. And Shea, I'd love to hear from you as you kind of reflect here, now that you've fully established yourself as a member of Montreal. It's such a different atmosphere. I love going up there and just taking in a game at Bell Center. It's such a special place, and you feel all that history. And, of course, Nashville is still such a newer market. It's a different thing. They're both great atmospheres for sure. But how have you handled the adjustment of the scrutiny you get, the masses of media that cover that team every day, every practice? There's all kinds of people there. What was that adjustment like, and how have you tried to handle that?
Yeah, it was a big adjustment for sure. It's, you know, some of my experiences through the past, so through Team Canada and Olympic stuff, have kind of prepared you for it. You know, the bulk of media, but I've never had it on a daily basis. So making that adjustment, coming and seeing 20, 25, 30 guys in your room for practice and, you know, just analyzing everything, whether it is practice, it's a power play penalty kill, and it just goes to show how much they care here. The people here care so much about hockey. Like you said, there's so much history. It's not to say that other places don't care, but I think that the city and the team have been so successful here in the past, and they're, you know, they've won so many Stanley Cups that the expectations are so high, and the people of the city are so passionate about their team. They want us to do well, and it's hard when things aren't going well yet. That's the way it is anywhere, and you know, it's something that you kind of have to embrace. We're all pros for a reason. We want to win, and it's the same goal for all of us. And sometimes it's just something you have to deal with here, and you got to make the most of it.
One of the things I always hear people say about you, Shay, is that people that are a little bit older that played in maybe the era before you came in, they love the elements of your game, the toughness, the physicality. And the game is obviously evolved. It's such a fast game now, but you've evolved your game along with it. Tell me how you've had to do that, because you look at analytics and how they've come into the game, and certain things are now emphasized maybe a little bit more, and you've had to adapt to all of that, but you've done a great job of doing that. What has that process been like?
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely, you look at guys before me as well, the rule changes, you see guys play before the rule changes to after, and it's just part of what we do. Obviously, there's adjustments that need to be made. There's a lot of video that we study now. You talk about analytics. I don't really follow analytics a whole lot. I think that I do like watching a lot of video and analyzing it that way, and I like watching games as well. So you study some of the guys that, like I said, I watch Roman play a lot, guys that do a lot of things well. Obviously, I'm not really comparing myself to Roman. We're completely different players, but you try and watch different guys and see what they're doing well to be successful and adjust those into your game as much as you can. And then I think obviously the training has changed a lot too. It used to be, like you said, the more physical aspect of it where you just try to get as big and strong as you can. And now it's more about speed. So you got to try and build that speed and be able to keep up.
Talking to Shea Weber, Montreal Canadiens captain here with us, longtime Preds captain. And Shay, it's obviously around here been kind of a different year, not only with everything going on now, but there was a coaching change. And, this organization had only known two coaches in its history, in Barry Trotz and Peter Laviolette. And when I look at the different eras of the team, with David Poile being the constant, how important was Peter Laviolette and his different style than he had than Barry Trotz? How important was that to this team and this organization?
Yeah, it was, you look at teams that go through a lot more coaching changes than that, and I think the biggest thing they say is that, sometimes it's just change is needed, and I think Trotsky had done such a good job for so many years of keeping it fresh, and with the teams he was given, he was, doing a great job making the playoffs, and I think it just came to a point where, we're looking to take that next step, and David was looking to, go a little further. And I think it was just a fresh voice and a little bit different style that kind of adapted more maybe to the team that we had at that point, and a little bit more aggressive, I could say. And obviously the results showed for it, coming up just short. And, I think obviously he did what he was supposed to do there. Obviously the ultimate goal is a Stanley Cup, but it was as close, I think, as you're going to get without winning. And, now it's time that they're changing it again and looking for maybe a fresh voice or a little bit of a different system to be successful in the game this year.
As we go day by day through this process and, try and learn more about the virus and have the discussions of when the season might resume, if it can, you're the captain of your team. So how much have you noticed your role change as the captain, as you talk to some of your teammates and your players and try and keep everybody together, even though you're all apart?
Yeah, it's tough. It's really hard because I think the unknown is probably the hardest part. You talk to all the teammates and you just kind of make sure everyone's staying healthy. That's the biggest thing. I think we want everyone to be healthy and get through this as much as we can. But it's, there's not much you can do. You don't see the guys. We're used to seeing each other every day. And a lot of guys are back in Europe with the time change. It's just kind of tough to keep everyone as close as you are during the year, but you just remain in contact and you just kind of hope that things get better, and we're just kind of waiting to see what's going to move forward next.
I know you're a competitor and you obviously want to finish what you started, but and I don't know if there really is a right answer of starting, finishing the regular season, just going into the playoffs, but have you thought about it much, or you just kind of let it play out?
There's so many different options. And the NHL is just weighing, I think, every option. Who knows what the best thing is. It's all going to be determined, I think, what the healthcare officials are saying, what's going to be allowed. I don't think any decisions will be made until then, but of course I'd love to finish playing. And, it's a tough outside chance for us. I don't don't see, you know, that being a big factor for us. But I think that I think everyone's looking for some sort of games coming in, and especially I think the team there, Nashville's, in a spot where, you know, they're a bubble team and they'd want a shot at trying to get in the playoffs before just starting a playoff. So who knows what the options could be. There really is numerous things, but I guess it's just a wait and see.
I asked this question to Chris Mason and Hal Gill last week, and you know Nashville, you know this arena and just how loud it gets and the playoff atmosphere. How weird would it be, though, if things come back, and it's like that in Montreal too, but if things come back and there are no fans and you don't have that part that we see so many times with the playoffs in the NHL?
Yeah, I mean, that's a possibility. It's a realistic possibility. So you think about it, and that would be weird, so weird, because I think that so much of that home ice advantage is feeding off the energy of the crowd and you know, not just the line changes, but using that energy. Everyone's so much more excited in the playoffs. Every game, every play means so much more. It's going to be an interesting thing if that is the case.
Shea, last thing as we wrap this up, I just wanted to get your assessment of when you moonlighted, I think, one time as an undercover TV reporter with Roman Josi. I think you guys were with News 6. That's appropriate that your mic flag had Channel 6 on there. How do you think you guys did? Is that something maybe life after hockey you want to be
it's an
TV
underrated
reporter?
I think it's an underrated performance.
Yeah. What did you think of your performance?
We honestly had a lot of fun with that. That was entertaining. Just getting some of the people's reactions and getting that, and definitely something we could not do here. I'll tell you that. Yeah, it would be a little too obvious. But one of the better things, more fun things I've done for sure.
In fact, I think that was right before the All-Star game, right? Wasn't that what you were doing it for?
Yeah, I think you're right.
And it was great. You're out in the plaza, if I remember correctly, and you've got the banner like right off to the right of you, and you're still interviewing people, and you're on the banner, and you and Roman.
We're standing right in front of the banner. They're pretty much looking at us and the banner. Like it was awesome.
That was fantastic stuff. That was great. Hey, it's always good to talk to you. Thanks so much for doing this. You and the family continue to be safe, and we look forward to talking to you down the road.
Thanks, guys. It was great catching up. You guys stay safe.
All right. Thank you. We will do that. Former Predators captain, now Canadiens captain, Shea Weber, and we do appreciate him joining us here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. We'll come back with more here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Shea Weber as much as we did. It's been a while since we've caught up with Shea, former Predators captain and now Montreal Canadiens captain. Number
Has he
six.
Been on with you guys since he left?
No.
I don't think so. No.
Not like that. I mean, I've talked to him, you know, outside the locker room, after games, just a casual conversation, but that's the first interview I think we've done with him.
I've talked to him on the corner of the street before the game against the Canadiens when
I've talked
tapped
to him
me on my shoulder, and I turned around and I thought it was just a fan and it was Shea. And I said, well, I guess you're not playing tonight.
It's so funny some of the interactions that you have with him. I was visiting family in Dallas one time, probably 4 or 5 years ago. Willie, we were talking about this recently because we went to the Mavs game the night before against Golden State. And I walk in the locker room after morning skate, and he looks at me and he goes, "Do you live here now? Didn't I just see you?" And I'm like, "No, I'm here covering the game." He goes, "Oh, okay. I was scared I missed that you moved or something." And then he just goes about tying his skates. But those are the type of random interactions you'd have with him. And Darren, as you said, on the street, just tapping you on the shoulder.
Yeah, because we knew that he was banged up, but we weren't sure if he was going to play or not play when we were done with the radio show that day. And it was probably 5:30. I'm sitting there on the corner, fifth and Demumbrian, and I'm sitting at a light crosswalk, you know, waiting to go across, and just felt a tap on my shoulder, and I turned around. I just figured, you know, it was Preds fan, wanted to talk or whatever, and turned around. It was Shea. It was just the two of us, and just caught up. And it's the same deal, you know. It's kind of like this, you know, you talk, you know, I talked a little bit about hockey, and you realize you get short answers, and then you bring up, you know, family and dogs and baseball or anything else, and, you know, those are the sweet spots for Shea, and then he'll talk all day. He loves talking about other things other than what he does.
Right. Well, and look, I mean, I think anyone can relate to that. You know, if you're an accountant, you don't want to talk about accounting all day. If, you know, I mean, there are times where people want to talk about what we do, and I'm like, hey, can we talk about something else? Like, it's just like you live and breathe it. So I get it, but that was always the best. You know, I'd walk in and we'd talk fantasy baseball because he was big into that. And so it was really good to catch up with him. I'm glad that worked out.
that was great. You know, again, it goes into this, you know, what are some of the silver linings of what we're going through right now? But when people aren't in a hurry and you're not into that daily fast grind of a season, and you're moving so fast and you only got a couple of minutes to catch up, that it's just so nice to have a relaxed conversation. And you could just hear that in Shea talking about it, just a little more laid back, time to gather your thoughts a little bit more. We got some great perspective there and a lot of different things that going on in his game right now, on his team right now, and also looking back, you know, several years. I do wonder how good of a baseball player he could have been. I can tell you that Tim Corbin has told me, because those guys have gone over there. Back when they were young, they would go over, you know, Dan Hamhuis went over there, Mace went over there, and they would take batting practice at Hawkins Field. You know, not a lot of fanfare, nobody around, just to play. And Tim Corbin was like, he could have played. He absolutely could have played big-time college baseball, Shea Weber. So there are just rare athletes that probably whichever sport they chose, they couldn't go wrong, and he might have been one of those guys.
I still think he made the right decision.
Oh, I think so, too.
There's no doubt, especially with his frame, could he have maybe had a professional baseball career? Yeah, probably so. But I still think he made the right decision. And I wonder, what does a guy like Shea Weber do life after hockey when he's eventually done, you know? Like, I wonder what, you know, does he have any interest in staying around the game? Does he want to just go away? Does he want to do something totally different? Does he just want to chill for a while? I mean, and probably he will. They all do that. And then they go crazy, right? It like turns into quarantine life like us. Like, everybody thinks they want to, you know, just have nothing on their plate. And then you do that for a good while, and then you realize, yeah, like, I have to do something. At least most people are wired that way. Right, you just, especially competitors, crazy competitors, you know, like Shea Weber, and yeah, probably a guy like Mike Fisher, you know, is going through right now. Now he's got some little ones at home, and so that's keeping him occupied. And he loves the, you know, outdoors, but he's still a fierce competitor. At some point, they have to do something, right, to kind of take that edge off. That's how they're wired.
Shea has little ones too, doesn't he?
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And big dogs. Yes. He always had I think he had the Mastiffs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He used to bring them to the locker room sometimes.
Yeah.
I've met one of his dogs before because he was just running around.
Yep. We used to talk about the dogs all the time, but I always wonder, like, what do they, like, what if I were to ask you guys, speaking of, you know, so I just brought up Mike Fisher as the recent example, like, what is, when he's done, you know, just hanging out, shooting his cannon, and going and sitting in a tree and hunting and playing with his kids, at some point he's going to want to do something. What do you think that would be?
That's a good question. I've never asked him that. I think if he wanted to stay involved with the game, there's any number of things he could do. He strikes me as maybe a little bit more of a behind-the-scenes guy, maybe as opposed to on-the-bench guy, but I could be completely wrong about that. I mean, there's a lot of different ways he could serve,
sure,
right? Maybe it's something on the player side. Maybe he could, you know, be a player advisor or a player agent. Maybe it's a player development person. But who knows? He could. He's one of those guys who could pick and choose, right? He could go to, the Predators organization. He could go to Montreal and say, "I'd like to be involved," and they would just probably go down the list and say, "Okay, what would you like to do?" Just like Mike Fisher has been given that opportunity, I know, here, right? All he would have to do is say the word, and they would find a role for him to get involved, even if it's just ambassador.
Yeah, I could see either one of those guys, Mike Fisher or Shea Weber, being like a developmental coach, you know, helping the next wave, you know, similar to what Scott Nichol has been doing with his career. Whether it's, you know, the front office side or just, you know, actually on the ice, I could see it. And like you said, they're going to have their choice if they want to. And, you know, Shea, I could see, you know, when he's done, he just walks away for a while and does whatever and then comes back. But I definitely could see them having some sort of role, probably not the media side, but because I just don't think that's where their, you know, where their heart lies, where they would want to go. But I could see something from a coaching or front office standpoint for sure.
Yeah, you kind of know the guys who would want to do the media route. Like you
Chris
know.
Mason or Hal Gill, no surprise at all. Yeah, no surprise.
You kind of know, but especially Shea. Like Shea to me would be perfect in a role where you can – like a player, like the PA rep, a guy who just commands a room, a guy who's got the respect of everyone. That's like something he could do, you know?
Definitely.
So well. Because both of them are like that, right? Mike Fisher and Shea Weber are just guys that they don't have to say much. They just command the room and that they have the respect. And so that, you know, I could see something in that capacity for sure. Elliot Freeman from Sportsnet. Our weekly chat with him coming up at 1 o'clock. We'll come back more of Darren, Donick, and Chase next.
Darren, Donick, and Chase coming up at 1 o'clock. Elliot Freeman. We'll get the latest on what Dr. Fauci has said and what that will do with the wheels turning. I thought it was interesting. Shea Weber maybe going a little further than some players have in past weeks when they've started to do this. You know, just kind of entertaining. Chase, the idea of playing in front of no fans, right? Yeah. You said you have to think about it. It's possible. It's very possible. I think it's become, you know, more of a reality in our minds that this really, you know, might happen here. So you start going through all of those things. We talked to Wes Durham about it as an announcer, right? He was getting ready to call a basketball game with no fans in the stands. At least they had bands there. Sure. I don't think you'd even have that for hockey there, but this really could happen.
Well, and I think, too, and I could be just, you know, we could be too close to the forest because of just what we do with the Predators and with hockey. But I feel like it would almost be more of an adjustment for hockey players than it would be for any other sport just because of the atmosphere that you see, especially in the playoffs. And again, you know, we're so used to it here of how loud it gets and home ice advantage meaning so much. But when I did the video with Chris and Hal last week, that you can go to our YouTube page, The Game Nashville, and check that out. You know, one thing that they brought up was the chirping. You know, there's so much chirping that goes on the ice, and you're not going to be able to cover that up now with the fans being gone. So what do you do there if you're the TV networks? You know, how do you kind of have control of the mics and sensors and stuff like that? But it also, there are times in a game that you could be down by a goal and the fans get behind you, that there really is that extra energy that gives you that something to help pull you out of that and find that goal to tie it up or even win the game. We've seen it so many times here during the playoffs or even the regular season. So I definitely think that the players have to be having it top of mind just so they're prepared for it, because it's going to be an adjustment.
I think that's a really fascinating psychological part of the game that I wonder what we'll see. You know, if we get a chance to see extended sporting events, whether it be baseball, which is happening in Taiwan right now as we speak with no fans, if Major League Baseball could get to that point. And that is what is the real effect of fans on a game, right? There are some that try to you know, go with the argument or make the argument that, you know, home field advantage, home ice advantage, the roar of the crowd doesn't affect the game as you might think, as much as you might think.
Right.
I've always felt, especially, you know, the younger you are in college basketball, I think we've said statistically is the biggest home court advantage. But I do think when that crowd's roaring and the other team has some momentum, for some players, probably a lot of players, it does affect the decisions you make. It does affect your ability to concentrate and execute. I do think that makes it can make a difference in a game. Although I do think the older you get, the higher the level, the higher the level of players, they are less affected by that. But I think we're going to find out some interesting things if that happens. And that would be like, let's say a team's up 4-1 going into the third period, and the team that's behind scores a couple of quick goals, and suddenly it's 4-3. If that game were in that team's home building, can you imagine what the crowd would be like, right? In either building, right? Maybe it's the home team that's given up two goals. The tension, you can feel the tension in the building, right? The crowd is scared. The crowd is nervous. And in the other way, if the home team is coming back, you know that place is going to be buzzing. It's going to be rocking. They're going to be banging the drum. Everything's going to be going that way. And you won't have any of that either way. So what will you see on the ice, and how will it affect the decisions everybody makes on the ice? I think that's something, you know, and the same could be said on a basketball court. It'd be really interesting to watch that.
Well, and I think here's another part of it. If you're a player, do you want game ops to do their thing? Do you want music? Do you want the pump-up videos? Do you need those things, or do you want it to feel like a practice where there's no ancillary noise? You know, do they play with the idea of pumping in crowd noise? I mean, I know that sounds silly, but do they look at that idea of possibly doing that? These are all questions that a month ago we might have looked at as silly because we wouldn't even be thinking about this. But now I think they're questions of, oh, well, either they've thought about that or I haven't thought about that. That's a good idea. You know, and here's another one for you. You know, your normal position at Bridgestone Arena, let's say that wherever they play these games, you're involved and you go with them and you're going to be calling some of these games. I mean, where do they put you? Do they put you in the normal spot of you're above the ice so you can look down? Do they put you lower because, you know, you don't have fans now? What happens? Wes Durham brought this up last week. If, you know, you say, well, that was an ill-advised shot by Ryan Ellis, you know, does Ryan Ellis turn and go, Willie, what the heck? You know, what are you talking about? Like, how do they do that, those sort of things? So I think those are all crazy little ideas that have to be top of mind.
Yeah, I think it all starts with what is the facility that you'll be playing in. If it's an NHL facility or an NHL type of facility where the press box is in a normal broadcast location, that would be one thing. But let's take one example of what you have. In Dallas, the TV broadcast is put down on near the club level, closer to the ice. And we are literally right next to the Dallas broadcast. Now, when there's 16,000 or 17,000 people in there, even though we're right next to each other, we can't hear what the other broadcasters are saying. The crowd really can't hear what we're saying, let alone the people on the ice. But if there were nobody in the building and we were side by side, we would hear each other all the time, right? And who's to say maybe even on the ice, if somebody got really excited, you might hear that somebody on the ice might hear what you said.
Right.
And what comes to mind is like, let's say I yell out, Ellis missed the net. Oh, he had a great opportunity and he just sent it wide. Well, what if that same shot actually hit the post or the goalie made a great save? And he looks up at me and he says, I didn't miss the net. That was a great save. You know, that happens from time to time because it happens so fast. Sometimes you're taking an educated guess or what you think your eyes saw, and you don't have time to go back and watch the replay. And after the replay, then you would find out. But I wonder about those things.
Yeah, and look, they're not to open up all the tricks, but there are little tricks, especially as you just said, it goes so fast. You know, one thing, and I haven't done a ton of play-by-play, in my career, but I did have somebody teach me one time of, you know, if you have a player and you're, especially if you're doing radio and you don't know who it is right away, I mean, sometimes you might say the wrong name and then go and correct yourself once you figure it out. You're not really going to be able to get away with that as much because, you know, somebody could hear that. But I think things like that are very interesting, you know. And here's another one. Are they even going to have, like, would they even have you guys in the actual rink, or would they put you in another room and you call off a monitor? That's another thing to consider.
Or would they even have us in Nashville, you know, in some sort of made-for-TV studio where they try to make it as realistic as possible? You know, they actually do broadcasts of some sports in that fashion.
ESPN does it for lower-level college football.
I think Lindsey Rowley has done some volleyball games in a studio,
mm-hmm.
right, some college volleyball games, where she drives not to the campus but to the studio to do it. So it has been done before. I think there's been some World Cup soccer, many World Cup soccer broadcasts done from the home country via satellite. You know, you're in a booth, or you're basically in a studio, but it's as if you're in the booth and you call the game,
right.
But you're not on site. You know, there, so that can be done for sure. So there's a lot of things being kicked around, I'm sure.
And I think there would be some of that, just because, I mean, we're sitting here, you're at your house, I'm at my house, Darren's at his, we're doing a radio show. Technology is such now that it's able to that you're able to do that. So I could see that, from trying to keep the numbers down as low as possible of how many people are involved, that, you know, they might say, well, you know, broadcasters are going to have to do it from their home plate, you know, home studio or something. They're not going to be here with us.
Yeah, it's possible. Now, just as a play-by-play person, I would say that it would make your job a lot tougher. You know, people ask me sometimes, do I watch the monitor when I'm calling the game? And I never do, because you need that wide lens that your eyes give you, to where you can see everybody on the ice at all time.
Right.
And you can look where you need to look. Whereas if you're watching a camera, if you're watching a monitor, you can only see the one look that's on that monitor. And you may not see everybody on the ice. So that would make the job very, very tough. Plus, just feeling it, just, you know, hearing the sounds and being there makes all the difference in the world to me. So I, you know, but under the circumstances, who could complain, right? If they told you that's the way it was going to go.
Yeah, no, I mean, that you just kind of have to go with what they throw at you for an unusual situation like this. So I think that it would be an adjustment, but people would make do.
When we come back, we will wrap up the third hour of the show. Don't forget, at 1 o'clock, Elliot Friedman is going to join us, and we'll get his thoughts on where this whole thing stands. Today, we've hit on a number of different things, not only the NHL and the NBA, and this whole concept of trying to create a little community, a mini community where you could play games with no fans, but also the is that the college sports are facing in the NCAA on a college campus. How can you have sports? That's the reality that they are dealing with looking ahead to the fall. Stay tuned. We've got a lot more coming here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Plan on ending strong here today on this Thursday afternoon. Shea Weber started this hour. Elliot Friedman will start the next hour. We had Adam Kaplan at 11 o'clock. Dan Wolkin back in the first hour. It's been a fun show here today, as maybe the weather outside is maybe a little indication of maybe some possibilities, some positive possibilities down the road. A ray of sunshine, as they say in the sports world. And maybe that started yesterday.
Love
with
that.
With the PGA saying, you know what, we're targeting the middle of June. MLS, you know what, we're targeting the middle of June. What UFC has now come out and said May 9th is what we're planning on having. Is that going to be UFC 249 again? Is that right? In May, May 9th is what they've said, the one with Dominic Cruz?
Yeah, maybe. I haven't seen this yet, so you've that's on, yeah, May 9th.
By the way, Willie can appreciate this. I had a long conversation with Ed Clay last night.
Oh,
it's
nice.
Been many years since I've talked to Ed Clay, and we caught up last night, talked for a long time, and
In fact, he even offered, he just did a long podcast a couple days ago with Dominic Cruz. He is business partners and friends, very close friends with Dominic Cruz, and said if we want him on the show before the fight or after the fight, whenever, he said just let him know. He'll make it happen.
Oh, that'd be cool.
How about that? Dominic Cruz, really cool. By the way, I've met. He's a great guy.
So the most of this card is coming from UFC 249, but okay. They're not necessarily calling it that.
Oh,
they're
just, okay.
It's just right now. It's just scheduled for May 9th, and the facility hasn't been listed either.
Yeah.
So I think it's just kind of up in the air.
This is the, and by the way, the other sport that I can't believe, as we've talked about on the show, that hasn't come out with something a little bit more definitive is I don't know what NASCAR is doing. Like, what are they waiting for? It just seems like they are set up like golf. They've got, to me, less obstacles and less hurdles to jump over and jump through to get their sport back. Obviously, it would not be in front of fans, but they could get it back on television and, you know, the drivers are in a car by themselves, and, you know, the crew chief can be up there in a pit box by himself, if so be. I mean, the only thing you've got is just the crew that changes the car, but maybe they're wearing masks, and obviously they've got gloves on. I mean, I just think, like, what is NASCAR waiting for? I just think they are set up like golf to get things going.
I think May 9th is their target date, too. It's scheduled to be the first night race ever at the Martinsville Speedway. That is the next race that is listed on the schedule, and the last update that they gave, that's what they said, that the hope was to return for May 9th at Martinsville. Everything else before that listed as TBD. So I could totally see it. I think there's a chance with everything that we're learning and the comments of Dr. Fauci that NASCAR could be next to say that we're going to come back on May 9th and race with no fans, but under the lights in prime time at Martinsville, and then they would be scheduled to have the All-Star race and stuff after that. I could see that going away, and they could use the next week or that May 16th week to try and get some of these races that were postponed done. But I think that there's going to be something here in the near future, and May 9th seems like it's plausible under the lights at Martinsville.
Why do we think Dr. Fauci came out and said that this week? Because that was like the first, like, oh, okay.
That's got to be planned, right? Like, you don't have a top advisor of the president of the United States just flippantly say something like that.
Well, he is, by the way, he's worked very closely with a lot of presidents, dating all the way back for decades. So this guy is not new to the scene. But why do we think he said that?
I would hope because he has researched it. You know, he's probably was given that, you know, a couple of weeks ago. I don't know how long ago, but he probably has taken some time to take a look at it to assess what you would have to do. And, you know, it was not a real long conversation, right? It was just a pretty short answer, but there's obviously a lot more
Snapchat
to it.
It was Snapchat, too. It wasn't
via
like
Snapchat.
ESPN
so let's probably not take it too much. I'm sure if he had more time to elaborate, he would tell you that there's a lot of things that would have to be givens before you could go do it. But I do think that has.
We've kind of joked about Taiwan baseball this morning that we were watching with their live stream in English on Twitter. But how much do you think Major League Baseball is paying close attention to what's going on with the Chinese baseball and the Taiwan league?
They got to be watching it every day.
Right.
Sure.
I wonder if they're talking to people. You know, if they're talking to officials over there, okay, how did this work? What did you do for this? You know, what are the players doing after the game?
But it comes back to testing, really, too. I wonder what Taiwan has got in terms of testing. There's less people there that you have to test, but I wonder, you know, how far along are they in testing compared to where we are? We're still fighting to catch up on a lot of levels there. So, you know, I keep thinking, I'm reading so many articles on so many different things here. I can't remember who said what, but there was, I think it was Greg Sankey last night that said he's trying to take it and say what we know now is very different than what we knew 3 weeks ago. And so now you look ahead 3 weeks, we're going to know a lot more then than we do today. You know, he said it very much clearer than I just said it, but it makes a lot of sense, right? In another few weeks, you hope that you have a lot more knowledge that will help you move forward with your plan.
Why do you think that and help me with this, because I'm obviously not educated on the Taiwan Baseball League. I have not paid any attention to it until now. Have they always done their broadcast in English, or are they doing this because right now they're the only sport going on in the world?
Great question. I have no idea.
I wondered that this morning because
I don't know.
I didn't care about if it was in English or not. I just wanted to watch, right? I expected it not to be in English.
Just out of curiosity, yeah.
And sure enough, I'm like, whoa. And I was, you know, after I watched the inning, I'm thinking, because at that point, I think it was already 15-2 or so. It was out of hand. What was the final, Elijah? I think you watched the whole thing.
It was 10-2 in the bottom of the eighth. So unless they just absolutely blew it was an 8-run game.
Oh, it was 10-2? I thought it was 15-2 when I was watching.
No, it was 10-2 when I quit watching.
Okay. But anyway, I wondered, like, are they doing this because they know that they're going to get, you know, eyeballs on their sport that they never had before because they're the only sport going on? Is that why they're putting it? They have a broadcast that's in English. So I was just curious, and I didn't know if that's standard operating procedures or if this is something different.
I mean, I don't know the answer, but I would almost think that it could be something different. You know,
that's kind of what I think.
That they know that Americans are going to want to watch, at least tune in, so they put English broadcasters in. And to what Willie and I were talking about, you know, when you stepped away, I think that could be a sign of things to come for certain sports. Of you might have people calling the games, you know, from another place, calling the games from a monitor and not actually being inside the facility.
Yeah. We'll come back. Fourth and final hour. We start with Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet. That's next.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week, we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.